Welcome to the Recovery Centered Podcast, the space for honest conversation about healing, hope, and the journey through mental health and addiction recovery. Each episode, we sit down with people making a difference, from therapists and researchers to change makers and to survivors. Now to explore what recovery really looks like in the world. This podcast is produced in collaboration with Beachway Therapy Center. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Recovery Center podcast. My guest today is Gary Roberts. Gary and I met each other a few months ago, and we've hit it off ever since. And when, you know, I think the lane I'm in takes me to the lane Gary's in. And when we spoke and shared our stories, you know, there was so much in common. And I'm grateful to have him here as a guest. And prior to recording, we were just talking about, you know, I hope him and I can reach that one guy today or that one person today. And with that being said, Gary, you want to introduce yourself, my friend?
Definitely. Thanks for having me, first of all. It's a pleasure to be on the show. And like you said, we met a couple of months ago.
Yep.
We hit it off. We're both basically, you know, in the same pathway. Gary Roberts, a 20-year veteran firefighter, city of Fort Lauderdale. I started down a whole mental health path with my personal story that we can get into a little bit later, but I'm looking to try and get to that, like you said, that one person that's going to make, that we can change their life.
Yeah.
You know, one person that listens. As long as, the more we bring the stories out, the more people will understand what we're trying to do.
So, you know, I guess, like, for, you know, I've had my own issues. I'm back, thank God, with somewhat stable 18 and a half years, you know. Like, we've been given a gift, you know. You mentioned you had your struggle, and obviously you're a firefighter. What do you think you see daily with firefighters? Because I work with a lot of them myself, and there's just that, it's very stoic still, you know, and nobody wants to say anything. But meanwhile, like, we're crumbling. Like, I can go into buildings that are burning. I can get cussed at and get shot at, possibly, you know, blah, 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 blah. I trained to save everybody else's life, but I'm not trained to save mine.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the question everybody asks you. Well, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? Well, you know, it's kind of,
I'm not a big fan of that question.
It's kind of hard to say. It's because we see people in their worst condition all day long. You know, you go every third day, you're seeing somebody who has a major emergency, their major emergency, and you do that over a year, day in, day out, and it kind of, I always say, it eats away at you and you don't really know. It take, like, you have a 30-year career. It takes a small piece of your soul every time. And you don't really feel it. You know, most of the time you're like, yeah.
Because it's so slow, you think?
It's so, like, slow. And that's the biggest thing. A lot of people, a lot of firefighters, first responders, police officers don't understand that. They don't understand that you go in as one person and everybody says, oh, I want to help the community. I want to help somebody. I want to help people.
Yep.
And then that attitude slowly changes over the years as that piece of soul is ripped out of you. And it's never becoming the same when you first started.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand, like you said, until it's too late, until they decide to do something that destroys everybody else.
Do you think, like, if mental health was a priority, like, say you're training, like, you know, training is a priority. Is that fair?
Yeah.
It's constantly training, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, Gary, like, from your, you know, obviously your experience, your time, maybe what you see? I mean, we have a good idea of what you see, but I'm just talking about, like, at the kitchen table, you know, in the firehouse, you know, like, what do you see over time? Like, do you think mental wellness, mental health could be something that maybe, obviously not trained specifically like you do to do what you guys do, and you do it so boldly and so heroically, you know? Maybe like a mental health thing once a month, like anything, like, would you feel that would be a big benefit? Like, if they started implementing that?
It would be. I think mental health is still a stigma in the department. It's basically, you know, you got hired to do a job, suck it up, do your job. You know, you still got some still older people that have been there for years that don't see mental health. They see it as a toughness. It's like, it's kind of like having your helmet that's black. You know, all these guys with black helmets are like, you know, they're real firefighters. And you find out that they've never been in a fire and they got their black helmet in training. It's kind of funny in that sense.
But it's
something that needs to be talked about. It's something you need to be open about, and something that many people don't feel comfortable talking about.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, the hardest issue about finding out what to do, how to do it, is that we really don't know what's happening to us. So it's the little pieces we have to listen to. Those who are in the industry, or those who are understanding, is going, listen to little pieces. You'll have, you know, you'll start understanding when people start taking promotional exams, or like, I can't study, I can't sleep, I have anxiety. Little things like that are a buildup of mental health over the years of that little piece of soul taken away
from you. There you go, man.
I've talked to a lot of firefighters on my podcast that says they started out a wonderful individual, happy, smiling, and then he, next thing you know, it's anger issues. It's they're explosive in anger, and they're mad all the time. Well, that's that small piece of soul that's taking away from you. And you got to, people who are in the industry got to understand that. So when they see that, they got to come up to the people and say, hey, listen, what's going on?
Yeah.
Give them better techniques. And again, it goes with, it's an overall health. Mental health is not just a mental health. It's not just a mental thing.
Yeah, I mean, occupation, of course, like some things contribute to it more. But do you feel too, like I believe, you know, it's still a human condition, like regardless of the occupation. Yes, do some contribute more than 100? Of course they do, right? But I mean, behind those uniforms, behind the desk, behind whatever, behind, there's still a human that has human conditions, you know? And
I believe it's a lot more than just a mental condition.
Mm.
I believe it also goes into a physical condition.
Oh,
in other words, your body's one. It's like the brain controls the body, but when the body doesn't feel good, brain acknowledges it. You got to coincide. There's more studies coming out that saying, you know, gut health is helping out with inflammation in your body. Working out helps. Mm. All this type of stuff is more than just a mental health conversation where we can just talk about it. I think there's a lot that we need to learn about and teach people that, you know, taking better care of yourself overall is it'll be a longer lasting effect than just talking about mental health.
Self-care.
And that's the biggest thing. Yeah, self-care.
Self-care practices, right?
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing in the fire department. It's hard with on shift, on calls. We don't know when to eat. You got people who don't want to pay for good food, who don't want to eat good food, rather, you know, just
shift
eat
work.
Junk food, shift work, bad sleep. It's, you know, all that comes up. Yeah. So on your days off, you have to build those personal regimens that actually can help reduce that effect.
Is there a common thread, Gary, that you see, or a common struggle amongst your community, you know, your occupation that I don't know, there's like things that you can start seeing in others, reported, you know, conditions, circumstances, depression, anxiety. Do you see a common theme that a lot of guys carry? Like, do they all of a sudden start isolating? You know, one day they're up, one day they're down, one day they did a 360, and it's like, whoa, what's going on? Maybe I need to talk to this guy or gal, you know?
You see that, but it's more, the problem with that is more of the later stages. It's after a couple of years. It's not in the beginning, you know, it comes later on.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's because they end up not taking care of themselves on their days off, so they end up going out drinking, and then they start getting in those groups. Or what they end up doing is they connect themselves to what we call to fire groups.
Mm.
What I mean by that is that they take that day, and then the next day it's everything about hook up with other firefighters and do other firefighter things, and then training, and then so that becomes like a 7-day job instead of actually a 2-day job.
Yeah.
So they never get that rest.
Yeah.
From what they're seeing every day.
Yeah.
And the studies have shown that's why a lot of cities are going to 24/72s. A lot of people are seeing that it takes 3 days for us to actually completely relax after a shift work.
Is your department going to it?
They would like to just talk about it, but I'm not 100% sure. Again, it's a city thing.
City
it's going to be, because you're going to have to hire a bunch of new people.
Like a whole new shift.
Yeah, almost, it's a whole new shift almost that you're going to have to hire.
Yeah. Wow.
And right now with retirements and everything that's going on, we're constantly hiring.
Yeah.
I think we had like over 100 people over the last year, 2 years that we've hired.
Lauderdale, right?
Yep.
100 people?
Yep.
That you took on the last year?
Yep.
And the year's not even over yet.
Yeah. To cover all the retirements that are coming up.
Wow.
Which makes a huge shift in mentality. Because now you got all these youngsters coming up. So it's like, it's not where the old guys are there, you know, where it used to be sucking up to your job. Now you're coming, youngsters are there and they're not sure what's going on with mental health. They're not sure, you know, they haven't built that fortitude yet, or that understanding of the whole job yet, because everybody's really still young.
Yeah. But do you think they're more open to it because, you know, being younger prior to the job, maybe you're exposed to it more like in high school or college, or, well, I don't know, growing up, you know, mom's a therapist, dad's a therapist, or, you know, like you see in that maybe?
Yes and no. I think the exposure's there because we talk about it, but the understanding of what we're talking about is not there. So the lack of education on what we're talking about is there. So the peer support groups are larger. They understand those. Like when those big calls come in, like a pediatric death or something else, those peer support groups jump in faster and they help. But is it the only thing that's being done right now? Yes. And they don't understand everything else that these peer support groups or groups like what you're doing or what I'm doing are actually doing. So there's really no education in those aspects.
I could see that, man. So I'm thinking just in these last 10 minutes, I'm thinking like, maybe we could turn somebody on to like doing at least a once a month thing or something, you know, like, how are you? Where are you at? You know, what was your, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, you know, what was the worst five calls you had that you never talked about because you got more calls, you know, you just got back, had a bad one. And next thing you know, you're back in the box again or on the truck again, and you're taking off to another one. What, is there anything that you haven't caught up with? You know, I'm just thinking, because I deal with it, like you said, you know, with the charity. I mean, I'm 5 years in, I've helped hundreds of guys, like, and I haven't even met them. I mean, I don't want to meet them, really. That's not the point. The point is, you know, I want to do something because the need is there. And it's just a really good thing to do for somebody that wouldn't even ask me a question. God forbid I'm on the ground, you know, almost blue because I'm having a heart attack or whatever, and all my blood's going to my heart and nowhere else. You know, I want that, you know, and he wouldn't even ask me all this nonsense. So why am I going to, you know, I don't ask anything really. Just give me a name. What's up? So I can kind of give you to a therapist who I think might work, you know, but
the good thing is that nowadays we do that. I think what we're not doing is asking about our outside life. So at the fire department, we talk about those situations, those you feel goods and all that, and you know what's going on. But we really don't ask about what are you doing, what's going on outside, like your marriage, your kids.
And you live in a world like it's not.
Listen,
right?
We're spending half our life with each other. Yeah. Know, like my department, like the people I've been with close with 10 years now. We know everybody, our families, our kids.
Yep.
You know, we know everything. So we have that interaction of what are you doing off days? What's going on? We talk everything about, you know, because a lot of them retiring from finances. They ask me a lot of stuff from health and wellness. They know that I'm in the active plant medicine, mental health issues. So they come to me and ask that. So my station kind of talks about it.
Yeah, good. Good
but,
for you, man.
But if they don't have the people outside there, there's not very many people that will actually get those questions of what your life is like outside.
How do we get more people like you out there, man?
We need to educate them. I mean, I'll be honest. First of all, we need to educate them. And first of all, I'll be 100%, we need to get the cities to stop their current drug testing and start understanding science and plant medicine on how it's coming up and benefiting not only their firefighters, but their recruitment and the cities from frivolous lawsuits now and everything else. If we can educate the cities and management, then slowly we can put out education to the body of firefighters. Because right now there's so much misinformation about, you know, illegal substances and this and what's testing. You can't, can I? So nobody knows what's going on. That includes administrations, fire administrations, and city managers.
So is it fair to say like nothing in stone when it comes to that, you mean? Like,
correct.
Is that fair?
Yeah, it's correct. It's up in the air. I was just called down to the city of Miami and he asked me to talk to their city managers during their contact talks about doing different plant medicine stuff, whether they want to do medical cannabis or federally legal CBD, but how we can actually get that conversation started so that...
That's awesome, man.
Listen, it has to be done. Science is catching up to these drug tests, and they're so antiquated that we're losing access to compounds that have shown, studies have shown that have helped, you know, mental health, have helped addiction, have helped... Stuff like this. I've helped sleep, where we're no longer going to these medications like opiates or Valiums or depressants. Why? We can use that on shift as long as I have a prescription, but why can't we use something that's federally legal, like a CBD with a 0.3% THC in it? It blows my mind.
I like the genetics thing too. Like I like that gene testing, you know, because they compound certain medications or vitamins to what your gene says. Not to what the mouth says, right? Like the mouth, I mean, no disrespect to any professional, but, you know, professionals disperse medications based on what they say, the person says. And then, from my experience, there's a lot of adjusting, right? Because you're based on, but, you know, who knows if all that's true, what people say. And then there's the adjustment period. So, but the gene testing,
Genomic testing, yeah.
Identifies it specifically to what the gene is saying, right? And how the gene is showing up.
Right.
That to me, man, like, can be a game changer for probably so many people.
Yeah, that works tremendously for longevity aspect and the life of a firefighter, because that'll check out completely her hormonal imbalances, which a lot of prescription medication throw off.
Mm.
And especially now they're showing that the studies are showing that it also throws off your endocannabinoid system, which is what CBD actually regulates.
Oh, wow.
No other medication regulates but CBD. So if you're deficient in that, you're basically deficient in, it's like being deficient in vitamin E, vitamin D, you know, so you'll just get some vitamins. Well, the same thing is with those endocannabinoids. Yeah. It does the same thing. There's actually a genomic test for that as well that can tell you, are you tolerant to THC or CBD? Because everybody has a different avenue.
Yeah.
Like me, I don't, even though I'm a proponent for medical cannabis, I wouldn't use medical cannabis because I've already had the genomic testing. THC makes me more anxious.
Oh, wow.
It's not for me.
I got you. Yeah.
A higher CBD level is what I'm looking to use. Like I could use a federally legal with a 0.3% THC or something a little bit, you know, even higher, or like a 1-to-1 or something like that. And that would actually balance my body. And they've shown studies have done that. And they have genomic testing for that. So we can actually level that out as well.
And back to that... you know, the city thing, like, so your CBD level is not up in there yet. You're good. Like, it's good. You're okay.
I still take a THC free one until I get to city.
Yeah.
Because the only reason why, because the cities are still testing. I want to go on a rant now. Are still testing for a marijuana metabolite, which is for a piss test. Basically, a marijuana metabolite is an inactive, non-psychoactive, non-hallucinogenic compound.
Mm.
Which is a subsidiary of a THC compound. So they're basically testing for vitamin B.
That's
what they're testing for. Gotcha. It does absolutely nothing for you. Doesn't make you crazy. Doesn't do anything. And they're testing for it.
Yeah.
So you can get fired just by having a metabolite. But then if you follow federal law, marijuana is illegal. And according to the Farm Bill, cannabis from hemp with 0.3% is legal and no longer on this banned substance list and no longer should be tested for.
Gotcha.
So when the cities test for it,
yeah.
What are you testing for? Are you testing for the banned marijuana or are you testing for the illegal cannabis? Well, we can't tell because the test is antiquated.
Mm.
We need to change these tests or find some verbiage in there that says, okay, well, if you can show that the compounds come from a certified company with a certified certificate of analysis from a DEA, you know, certified lab saying this is the federally legal stuff, then we shouldn't be fired or have any penalized against us and good to go.
Is there licensed people that deal in that, like that advocate in that space or have practices in that space? You know, like you got something with your foot, you go to a foot doctor. Is there doctors, medical that work in that space? Like, so if you needed clinical documentation, you could get clinical, you know?
Well, in the state of Florida, we're actually a medical marijuana state. So those clinical doctors that provide you with medical marijuana also can provide you with the proper CBD that's actually, that's legal.
And that's through blood work?
Most of the time, they can take it through blood work, or they'll actually do studies with you, and they'll actually see.
Yeah.
Exactly. They won't do the genomic testing. Genomic testing is completely different.
Gotcha.
Like, I have my own CBD company, so I actually can get the genomic testing from partners that we have.
Yeah.
And I did it with my firefighter, saying, hey, listen, you guys all want to change your drug policy, and you all want to use THC, but how do you know that THC is any good for you? Because a lot of them say they don't want to use it to party, and that's the biggest misconception about administration cities. They think they want to follow firefighters, won't want to get off duty and go hit a bong, and that's not what they want to do. They want to get off their opiates, they want to get off their sleeping meds, they want to try something better than using alcohol the next morning to relax. And that's what they're looking for. So they're looking access to that type of stuff. And so I told them, I said, well, why don't you take a test to see if the THC is actually good for you? And I think I had about 20 people take the test, and they found out that THC was wasn't a good thing, would make them more anxious. And the test goes through everything from anxiety, mental health, different stuff. And it really comes out, like you said, a blood work for genomic testing for vitamins, basically vitamins and stuff, and shows where you're deficient and how it can help. So it's science has caught up to plant medicine.
Yeah.
It's time that the fire departments and the cities start doing the same.
I couldn't agree with you more, because nationally and statistically, we lose more first responders to death by suicide than we do in the line of duty. Again, this is not respect. This is just adult conversation, because it needs to be continued. The conversation needs to be always out there, and however we can do it, because really, like, what's with what I just said about the national average, we got to do something more. Like, something's missing, something's not working. Like, that to lose more guys or gals to death by suicide than the line of duty, like,
yeah, I think they said the statistics about 80%. There's an 80% chance of me dying by suicide than in the line of duty.
Yeah,
that's a statistic that first responders have, and it's ridiculous.
It just blows my mind.
And that's only from the recorded amounts. You know, some people say, "Oh, that's
great point.
That's not a lot." But the problem is that it's only been, I think, for the last 2 years, they've been trying to record suicide deaths, whereas before they would just put it as in the line of duty and kind of shove it under the carpet, so that. I don't know if it's because they want to lose recruiting or they're afraid that people don't want to do it anymore, or they just say,
yeah, that's a strange spot.
It's kind of weird, but it's something, and I can see why. You know, what are you going to do? take your dad to work day. You know, you got the firefighters, the superhero, and everything else is good. And what are you going to take? Next thing you know, is a kid wants to do it. He goes, okay, well, you know what? There's probably an 80% chance you're going to die by killing yourself. But you know what? Do you still want to do this career? Will it lose people from wanting to do it? It's an awesome career. 100%. Don't get me wrong. It is one of the best careers you can have, from the camaraderie to the groups to the feeling you get when you save somebody. It's an awesome career, but we need to figure out to have that conversation about mental health and how to stop it. I've always said we don't want to treat mental health. We don't want to find a way of preventing losing that small piece of soul we lose every shift.
Yeah, and just think about that, you know, like I said, I don't know, earlier in the podcast, you know, like we're you know, first responders are trained to save everybody else but themselves. Like, you know, I got my phone sitting here, and it's just amazing how, when it comes to me, how this phone can be 900 pounds. So I think one of the bravest things we can do is tell somebody, I'm not doing well, because there's that pimp. Like, it's just unbelievable. And if you can break through that, I think that's very courageous and something monumental, you know, to be able to do that.
We have to break through the tough guy mentality.
Yeah.
Listen,
it's a different kind of hard, Gary.
Yeah. We're all tough.
100%. You guys are the most toughest people I know. But what fascinates me, I don't know if that's the right word, but intrigues me, I think. What intrigues me is, why is it so hard for us to internalize that and reach out? Yo, Gary, I'm hurting, man, and I don't feel good. This has been going on a long time. I can't take it anymore. I need to tell somebody, and I trust you. Like, to me, that's a different kind of hard.
Well, that's slowly. People are slowly doing that now.
I love that, man.
They're coming to slow. I've had another individual come to me the same thing.
Good.
And ask me, you know,
yeah,
I'm having bad, this, that. He goes, do you think that the plant stuff that you're talking about might help? And I says, yeah, let's give it a try. Slowly keep in touch with me.
Nice.
We'll work through it and see if it works. Because, you know, it's not like we're giving them, you know, a huge amount of plant stuff to where it'll take them to another universe.
Yeah.
You don't feel the change, but you slowly understand. Like, you know, holy crap, I don't have that anxiety that I had before. I don't have the urge to explode on every question. Because what most people don't understand is firefighting, we live in a negative world. A lot of people don't get that. What I mean by negative world,
I get that,
is we always look at the downside of everything. Why? Because on a medical call or a trauma call or where we at, we have to say, if that doesn't work and he goes down, what's my second plan? What's plan B? What's plan C? So we're always thinking of the negatives. We're never thinking of, hey, this is going to work. It's like, hey, this is not working. Let's go here. Well, we take that mentality and we bring it into our personal life. So now if you have a wife that has a problem, our mentality immediately shifts to that negative. That's where it causes a little friction between, you know, spouses and everything. That's why our divorce rate is high, because we're always thinking of, well, if I don't get this right away, there's something bad that's going to go on. And so I might as well think of the bad thing now and try to fix the bad thing now, when we haven't even thought about the good thing that if it does work. So we got that mentality going on of that type of stuff. But it's slowly changing. It's
Yeah, it is.
We need to have that conversation.
It's worth it.
And to answer your question, which I went off the rails a little bit, was a lot of people are afraid to come forward because administrations still don't believe that mental health is actually a disease.
Mm.
I've talked to 4 firefighters. I've a couple on my podcast that they had to fight and sue their city because their doctor says they had major mental health issues. They had to retire early and they had to fight for their benefits because they didn't believe mental health or PTSD was real.
Mm.
Not getting it from a fire department, from a firefighter job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, you don't understand. Again,
it's
that small soul that we're giving to you guys for 30 years.
Yep.
That is causing this.
Yeah.
And sometimes it becomes, we don't know it until it becomes too late.
Yeah.
And then if we have to retire early, you're saying, well, we don't believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. I notice charity stomping out the stigma, you know, and they do a phenomenal job. You can't get any more secret or anonymous than how they do it. And I think that's why it works. You know, they're really expanding. They're going into different states and creating that space, you know, because they don't have to report to anybody. They raise their own money. The only person they're reporting to or they feel obligated to report to is the first responder that reaches out and calls them. That's the only person they have to, you know, report to. And I also, you know, with having, you know these people behind stomping out the stigma, they're also, like you're telling, they're also talking a lot about when guys go into retirement, you know, and how a lot of guys lose it quick because, like you said, you got that 30-year career, 0 to 100, saving lives, camaraderie, brotherhood, all that wonderful stuff. Like, you know, it is a great career. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like, phew, you get that day, you get the ceremony, you might have some pipes and drums, you know, and next day it's like, one day after your retirement.
Your email's canceled. Your card's canceled.
Everything's canceled.
The city won't talk to you. There's nobody to look for when you're for retirement. You ask questions. They don't return your phone calls. It's basically wash their hands of you. And it's like, what do we do now?
I have an idea for that, but I'm not going to put it out there yet. So we're talking about mental health, which is totally awesome. And I really just keep hoping that we reach that one guy. You mind if I take it a little personal?
No, go ahead.
With you? So, you know, in the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned you had your own problems. Would you? There might be somebody that catches this that's a first responder that has their own problems. Would you like let us into your world a little bit, what you meant by that, kind of like what was happening?
Yeah. So first of all, just to put it in context, I was working in a zone that is known for drug overdoses. We basically were doing like these 2 a shift, if not more, easy. And we had it so, our team had it so well done that it was basically whether you were blue and dead, we brought you back.
Wow.
It was like constantly.
Wow.
And it was like 15 seconds, you're awake by the time you got to the hospital.
Wow.
So we had it that down pat. And we were doing that for two years. My daughter came to us one time. She was in a car accident and says, you know, I'm addicted to these pain pills. I can't get off them. I need to go to rehab. So we put her in rehab. That one didn't work. She got back on the pills, put her in another rehab. So she went in and out of rehabs for about 3 different rehabs. And she was really holistic. She liked, you know, she took care of herself.
Yeah, yeah.
She was one of those people that always gave to everybody else. Always.
Yeah.
Somebody else first, not her.
Yeah.
So she always took on a lot of stuff on her shoulders. So she always worried about stuff. And then one day on shift, I got the phone call from my wife saying, my daughter's on life support from an overdose. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This can't, I can take like that, bring you back, no problem. I'm like, why? How does this happen? And I says, it can't be. There's the cop's just lying. He doesn't know anything medical. He's a cop, you know, apologize to all police officers there. But, you know, you have that denial mentality.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting this information from a police officer who told my wife, which, you know, we're thinking, okay, this can't be right. So we ended up going, and it was true. She ended up having, you know, being on life support for, because of an overdose.
Yeah.
She overdosed on, you know, her pain meds and everything else. And prior to that, the 3 stents in rehab, she says, we need to change the way the rehabs are working. Let's try and do a holistic thing. And that's when Florida was coming through their medical cannabis. And we were thinking about incorporating a whole wellness, including plant medicine, to try and change these rehabs. But before we can get it off the ground, this was her last stent. Basically, unfortunately, she wasn't coming back from this one.
Yeah.
You know, and being in the industry, the doctors kept saying things where my wife think, oh, she can make it. I'm like, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, he's saying the CYA stuff so he covers him.
Mm.
But basically, she's either going to be stuck in this bed or we have to let her go. We have to make the decision to remove her from life support or not. That was the biggest thing that happened to us. And we looked at each other and said, okay, well, in her name, we're going to try and create different pathways for people who are going through addiction, different opportunities that if regular addiction does not work, you know, and you keep following those, what other options do you have?
Yeah.
Instead of going to that, you know, that wheel.
Yeah.
And that's what back then when Florida was known nationally as a brokering state.
Yeah.
Basically where everybody went into, you know, to their living quarters and they were being paid by rehabs to actually get a hook back on so they could go back to the rehab.
Yep.
So, you know, until they put the new law in, I think was it Lindsay Lohan's dad's law or whatever they put in. I think
a good friend of mine, Dave Arenberg, he really clamped down on that. I know here for Palm Beach, but I think he had a lot of influence in other counties too. He was a state attorney general for Palm Beach County.
Yeah, there was a whole thing about call centers to actually bring people down and stuff like that.
Yeah, he went after it hard, man. You know, like they were buying tickets and like all kinds of stuff. Like,
So that's what we went through, and that was the beginning of the issues.
You're where you're at now, right?
Well, the problem with that is that 3 months later, I got a call from my mom, and my dad passed away. I don't know if I told you that before, but I went home and I found out he was writing. He used to be a printer. He used to make so he could design stuff. Well, he designed his own prescription pad and was actually getting opiates.
Oh man!
And I think he passed away in his sleep from an overdose,
like OxyContin's kind of.
Yeah. And we didn't know that until we cleaned out his stuff and we saw the notepad that he actually created.
Oh wow.
So, that was 3 months later. And then within that same year, I lost a fellow firefighter to suicide. And that's where I said, okay, well, we need to change the whole ball game from, mental health to plant medicine, helping with addiction. It says there's got to be some way we can bring all this in the mix to see how can we change the options.
It's like you turned your pain into purpose. I love that, man.
Our whole program was basically, designed to keep my daughter alive, basically her legacy, trying to keep her memory.
Beautiful.
Whether I go back to the earth and sand or whatever, as long as her memory stays alive and does what she's always wanted to do, help people, which was interesting because we always knew she wanted to help people, but she never told us why. When we took her off life support, there was a lady that walked in. She goes, "Well, I need to talk to you because we need to fill out some paperwork." I'm like, "Paperwork for what?" Well, your daughter was an organ donor.
We did not
know. But that was the type of person she was. She was always giving to others. She didn't really worry about herself. She just always took on other people's pain to try and help them.
I don't even know her, and I love her. I love that spirit and that attitude. Do you know where they went? Like, have you ever met?
I've never met.
Because I see those, reels. And
we received a letter through the agency, I guess, through the donorship, the guy that got it. He's alive. He thanks us. So she actually saved a life. Even though we couldn't save hers.
I'm 63. So, I can still get choked up.
So
it was beautiful.
Yeah. So it was good to know that she actually on her last, you could say deathbed was
good
able
deed.
To
actually, her last
give somebody a life that she couldn't last through.
Yeah, man, that's beautiful. Wow.
So
here you are. You've started the company. You started taking things into your own hands through pain and purpose and legacy, like all this amazing stuff. And then you created an app, right? You got
So you were saying that the thing that we need to get is we need to get people to talk. You were saying, stomp out the stigma. The good thing is people can anonymously, talk. And we had to kind of like the same idea you were saying. It's like, okay, so there's a bunch of firefighters out there, or first responders, who are afraid to come forward, whether it's administration-wise, whether it's going to get, harassed by their friends saying you're weak, you're not strong enough.
You don't put me with that guy. I don't feel safe on shift with him and all that.
He needs a cry closet. Let's, kind of thing.
Yep.
Kinda.
Yep.
So we says, well, what happens if we actually created a mental health app that actually has all this information inside of it from top researchers, top physicians, top clinics that it can talk to, that you can talk to it, and it'll actually read your biometrics on either your watch or your wearable, whatever you have, and also can read the tone of your voice, and it can understand what you're kind of going through, and it learns from you.
Incredible.
And you can ask it information, and it slowly says if you need to reach somebody, they can lead you to whether it's a clinic in your area, whether it's a different option that's not working.
That's so cool.
You know, you say, I've tried this. It says, okay, well, other options. Here it is. Your biometrics say this. Maybe you should go for a genomic test and test this for these levels. You know, all this information that we have into it, and that's the kind of app we built called Neurovis.
Neurovis? Does it have a kind of like an AI base to it?
An AI base, which is a large language model. So it actually, the more you interact with it, the more it understands you. So it becomes a precision medicine tool or a precision coordinator. So even if you went through rehab and you tell it you went through rehab, it'll actually help you continue on your journey.
Yeah.
So it's not like one of those, like everybody goes, oh, it's ChatGPT.
Yeah.
ChatGPT is a generic thing.
Yeah.
We're talking, it'll read your watch. It'll see how you feel. It'll tell you didn't sleep well, this.
Is that the watch?
No, this is actually just a Whoop. But we're talking with different companies like Whoop to actually integrate this type of stuff.
Oh, wow, man.
So every kind of wearable, whether it's the Aura Ring, whether it's the Apple, whatever we can actually do to actually get these people to start talking so that they actually say, hey, lead you to stomp out the stigma or lead you to a personal conversation with somebody or even booking.
Hey, you might have beat me to this, man, but I just had a thought. You need to go to Shark Tank. I think one of those guys, dude, I'm really serious. Like it came boom. It just hit. I think one of those guys might jump on it, man. Like
We're having a beta version. Beta version is being built right now. So we're going to get it out, test it, get a few users. I know Shark Tank want to see like if there's any users first of all. So we have to get all the bugs out before we go in front of the sharks.
Did you guys hear that? Start reaching out to Gary's because I'm going to ask him for his information, how to get in contact with him. Be timely end. You got to get with him.
So yeah, so that's basically how we decided to actually do it. And it's we've got a lot of extreme interest in it from different clinics, physicians.
I love that.
You know, and we're building the language model, so it's not like a ChatGPT. Everything's researched. Yeah. Everything's based is real medical information that you can connect with.
And all that data keeping, obviously, is like obtainable like that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Wow.
And it, like I said, it learns with you. So as soon as you start talking, it'll lead you through the different data and you can go.
I love that.
From everything from fitness to mental health.
Yeah. And just had another thought. You're not putting yourself on blast one-on-one with somebody. Like,
exactly.
You can't get any more anonymous than that.
Exactly. But imagine this, like even regular like rehabs.
Yeah.
If everybody gets on this app, it keeps that community. So that community consistently. So even if you have you're with the groups and you like those people and you're afraid to go in another group, you can stay kind of with that group.
Yeah.
You can kind of keep in touch with everybody and see how it's going.
Yeah.
So you always have somebody that you're comfortable with to reach out to. It's not like you're going new.
Dude, I love
you're going back home. You come to Florida, go to rehab, go back to New York.
Yeah.
You know nobody.
I love that, dude. It's like
which is why most people relapse because they don't know anybody. So what are we gonna do? Just
it's spot on.
Go back to the wrong thing.
Spot on. Like I know Beachway has their alumni. Is that camaraderie? It's solid, man. They really held each other accountable and they communicate and they do a ton of stuff with each other. No matter where you are, you know, you can always text or love that. Kind of like a 12-step. You know, there's a lot of great little clubs out there or meetings, all the guys, you know. The meeting before the meeting, then the meeting, then after the meeting, you all go out and get something to eat and you can confide and
exactly. Yeah. It has everything from psychedelic knowledge and everything else. And you brought up the 12-step thing, and a lot of people don't understand where the 12 steps came from.
Yeah.
The one who created, the individual who created the 12 steps, I can't figure out.
Bill Wilson.
Well, he came up with 12 steps while he was on an LSD trip.
Yeah.
Which is what kind of brings me to the whole fact of, you know, the whole psychedelic thing, what people are scared of, if it's medically supervised, it could change. It could be a game changer for a lot.
Yeah, he was doing it in the 50s. He had major depression. I know they use the word clinical depression. That's like very severe, you know. But he major depression, man. And he started doing some of that stuff back then.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. So I always kind of get less slowly in some arguments with some different rehabs. Yeah. Like, you know, you can't use drugs to fix drugs. I'm like, you can't, but yet you'll prescribe Valium and Suboxone when the guy leaves, like did to my daughter. I'm There's a way to balance everything.
It's a very emotional conversation.
Subject, yeah. Yeah.
It's like belief systems and all kinds of different things. I tried my best, and I usually make it out okay, you know.
Unscathed.
I'm just a true believer in, I can't deny anyone or someone their due process in life. I can't do that. I don't have that kind of power, and I think for me it's very disrespectful. You know, what works for one person may not work for another person, vice versa. All I know is I hope you call me when you're down and out, because I don't give a shit what time of day it is. I'm coming to get you. I'm going to hang out with you. I'll go on the whatever we have to do.
That's it. And I agree 100%. And that's where I say,
right?
We need to bring the different options to the table.
Correct. Because a lot of people who struggle too, like, they've been criticizing themselves their whole life, or they've been in an uncritical environment. They've been talking to themselves like this their whole life. And then you got some guy shoving something down their throat, and just like, man, no matter what I say, you know, no, I'll never be understood. Like, that's a lame, like, I just don't want to go down, man.
Yeah.
I will never deny somebody their due process in life. Because, like I said, people struggling are already beating the hell out of themselves.
Well, that's the hardest thing with again, we'll go back to the first responder aspect. The hardest thing talking about the first responders and people who say they're helping them, you understand because you're kind of in that community.
Mm.
So you understand where they're coming from.
Oh, yeah.
But if you get the guy who doesn't want to tell his department or doesn't want to go through his department's EPA,
yep,
and goes out somewhere,
yep,
he's going to sit in front of a therapist or somebody who has no idea.
Yep.
About his life or anything else, and just tell him that,
yep,
he's doing everything wrong.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
when it's not that he's doing everything wrong, it's that you just don't understand what he's technically going through because you've never understood the whole path of
not very empowering.
Correct.
You know, and it's
and that drives them to, you know, this doesn't work.
Yeah. It becomes
a stigma against,
and it builds recovery. A case. It builds a case right up here. F that. I'll just suck it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's stomping out the stigma that, you know, they use licensed therapists. And I think it's really important that they're certified in trauma. All traumas are different, but they still have a lot of common themes, and you can build off that. But the icing on the cherry on is the culturally competent. And there's a lot of trainings you can do, you know. Like you said, I'm in that space too. I did one a couple months ago. It was phenomenal out in Tampa. I had the clinical part of it in the beginning, but then in the second half, had the lunch. I'm in a hot box with tons of smoke, masked up in bunker gear. You know, I had my mask on, crawling on my knees and trying to find a body. I found a dummy that's like 150 pounds. That's all awkward and stuff. It's really hard to. The guy's telling me, you got to keep one hand on the wall, too. And I'm like, well, I get a crap. But I'll tell you what, man, like, it really put me in there. Like, put me in there. And then we took out all the toys and we're cutting cars up. And it was cool, man. As you're talking with the instructors, like, you can just. There was that camaraderie, even though I'm not a firefighter. Like, I don't know how to do your guy. I'm, as a Marine, I know what it's like to go from 0 to 100, like you guys. That I know. And I know what it's like to really struggle coming back down from that. I get all that too, but I never did your job. I don't, but I can get into your world to a certain extent by, like, people like you taking their time out to bring guys like me into the world. Like, hey, man, we're going to talk about the culture. I'm going to have a guy talk to you right in front of you about the culture and what we do. And the guy was phenomenal. I felt like I was right there, you know, and because I'm always a front row guy. I think there's a label, ADHD or something. I just can't sit two rows or more. I'm all over the place. Like, but the guy really had me in there. And then, of course, the going into the house, the smokehouse, you know, the training,
yeah,
box.
You want to hear what I tell? I'll tell a lot of people the difference between the veterans and the firefighters. This is how I tell people that nobody understands the first responder community. When you say Marine, everybody understands what you went through. Why? You have movies out there like Platoon. They see the death and mayhem.
Yeah.
on the other hand, there's no movie or film or TV show that shows what the fire is. For example, you're in the hot box. Find a dummy, bring him out.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's really hard to bring a dummy out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're in 1,200 degree heat. Do you think the skin remains on that body while you're trying to pull it? You're de-skinning that individual while you're trying to pull them through, which stays on your gloves, which stays in the smell, which smell of burnt hair.
Yep.
And then you pull them all the way back, and then you got to put them in the back of the truck, then you got to try to find IVs on somebody who has no more skin that's bubbling. That's the reality.
That's brutal, man.
That's the reality that's difference deep. That nobody understands.
That's deep.
The difference between the military and first responders. We can look at what the military does. We can go rent a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not anything that we can see.
Love that.
The trauma and stuff that we really go through. We can fake it, but we can't fake the real aspect of it, which is a burning body with a skin bubbling, the stuff that stays on your gloves, the hair,
the smell
of burnt hair, the hand that gets degloved as you're trying to pull a heavy guy out, because there's no light people. 170 pounds is base.
Especially when it's dead weight.
Like. That's a normal person.
Yeah.
The average individual right now are 250.
Yeah.
They're big boys.
Yeah, yeah.
You're removing pieces, layers of skin, trying to get them outside. And that's the reality of what a first responder goes through.
Body keeps score of that trauma. And I'm sure you got to smell it for a couple days,
too. Oh, yeah. Stays in your nose, hair.
Stays in your nose, your hair, like
your clothes. And
yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
That's what I tell everybody else. I understand the whole aspect of many people going after the veterans and stuff. But when you understand what we really see.
Yep.
It really makes a difference of the trauma.
So will you please say thank you, my friends, when next time you see a first responder, police officer, I mean, they're first responders, thank them, you know? If they let you buy them a cup of coffee, buy them a lunch, man. Like, thank them, because they're always the selfless people that never ask any questions. They get the call, the tone goes off, they come to your house, they don't ask you all these silly questions. Their first priority is, if you're in danger, is to get you out of that danger and just... say hi to him. Say thanks, man. It's a beautiful thing. So, man, I'm so glad we went there. I'm so glad for this platform. Thank you, Beachway, for giving us this platform to reach people, to start changing the conversation. Gary was phenomenal. You know, he moved through his story. He's a hero. He keeps showing up, not only professionally, but personally. You know, what he shared with us that he had to go through. It's very unique, and these are the people that I'm very fortunate that I get to meet, and I get to, you know, do what we just did. There's plenty of us out there that are, you know, we went through the ringer, went through the meat grinder, and then we found a way out, and we've turned that pain into purpose. And that's another thing about this human walk. It can be really, really cool. So with that being said, Gary, if somebody's, you know, if we hit intrigue somebody and or they just want to reach out to a first responder, and on a personal side, he lost his daughter to addiction, and now he's trying to do, how would somebody get in touch with you?
You can reach me on my socials, basically Instagram. It's Gary Roberts at PIR. Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, they're all the same posts. Or you can just email me at GaryRoberts@Nerovis.com. And, you know, I'm always available. You know, I've had people call me from across the state, ask me different questions of, you know, what they can get, what they can get, different options.
Yep.
You know, I'll help you out the best I can.
And give him an opportunity to come through. Give him an opportunity to put his money where his mouth is. I guarantee you, he'll call you back if he just doesn't answer when you reach out. You'll get a call back. I'm the same. I'm all over social media, Tim Roberto. If you want to read my email, tim.r@beachway.com. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for Gary. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Your amazing journey and what you're doing and the difference you want to make. It's unbelievable, man. I love being around people like you. And until next time, my friends, peace and love.